Your call on KALW. Rose is out for one more day, and I'm Angie Cuero sitting in for her. Welcome back. It's many years now since Stonewall, and LGBT pride parades are the norm in cities around the country. But all too regularly, stories in the news remind us it's still not safe or even considered normal in some circles to be an out student in schools today. Dan Savage's It Gets Better video campaign and supportive tweets from Lady Gaga are up against anti-gay slurs in common use at schools, and in some cases, indifference from parents, teachers, school administrators, or all of the above. We have guests with us today talking about the experience of growing up LGBT and what it means for students to go through that process today. Ronald Henry Schmidt is here in the studio. We'll hear his personal story, and later in the hour, we'll be joined by the communications director for the Gay Straight Alliance Network, Jill Marcellus. We also want to hear from you as we discuss these experiences. Do you have your own experiences of being gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender in school? What about your children? What resources do you or did they have? How have things changed? And what do you think are the best ways to help LGBT youth feel safe and supported? That's what we're going into this hour here on Your Call. And as you listen to Ron Schmidt, keep in mind he'll be speaking and reading from his book, Once Removed, A Story of Love, Loss, and a Cause Championed, tonight, Thursday, December 8th. That's 5 o'clock tonight at Cafe Flore in San Francisco. And a week from tonight, December 15th, Thursday, from 6 to 7:45 at the Hormel Center in the San Francisco Public Library. Ron Schmidt's a retired teacher, and his book, Once Removed, goes into his life as a closeted gay man and his journey through Catholic schools, marriage and family, single parenting, alcoholism, psychotherapy, and coming out while teaching in a public school. He's co-founder of BANGL, South Bay chapter of the Bay Area Network of Gay and Lesbian Educators, and he retired from teaching in the year 2000. And thank you for coming into the studio.
Thank you very much, Angie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me ask you, in your own coming of age, if you can compare two experiences, and in your memory, what was your first indication that being gay was a bad thing, and at the same time, that you, in fact, were gay?
I think that there are two things. One of them is a gentleman who was in my parish, who was certainly he was called poor odd Claude by my family, and he sort of walked around always by himself and so forth. And he was always in the same pew at St. Mary's in San Jose, my parish church. I always knew that there was something different about him, and somehow I identified with that difference. The other thing is, when my family would take us to places on vacation like Santa Cruz, and in those days we had the saltwater plunge on the boardwalk, and going into the plunge as just a kid, really young kid, I was definitely aware of my difference from the way my brother observed girls and the way that my sister observed boys. I was much more in that latter category. I found that it was important for me to keep my silence, fear. It was fear that was engendered in me right in those early days.
How did you know you had to keep your silence?
Because of the attitudes that my family had about poor odd Claude, and about the teasing that I heard from other people in the neighborhood and so forth. I liked gardening. There's a chapter early in the book entitled The Smirk, where as just a young kid, I was given a heather plant by my parents for my birthday. And my brother, who was 4 years older, was just mortified. He said, "But he's a boy." And my father said, "Yes, but he likes to garden." So my brother had a friend of his there at the birthday party, and the friend smirked through the whole experience. It was just things like that that were part of the overall scale.
But does it indicate some acceptance on the part of your parents that they were willing to you know, for example, acknowledge your love of gardening? Was there fear on their part that they were encouraging something off?
That's interesting. It wasn't fear on their part at that point. It would be many, many years before I came out to my mother. My father, I never came out to. But when I did finally, as a grown man, a divorced father of two and so forth, she said, well, you always were different. And so there was that sense there also. In terms of having my own sons, this book has been amazing for me in terms of helping us to come closer together and feel more strain at times as well. If I may, I'd like to quote from the prologue.
Yes,
a little
would
bit
love to hear
here.
It.
My younger son and I had dinner at Nunn and Curry over on Irving Street. Some time ago now, but in any event, he said, I set my 41-year-old son's face contorted as he sat across the table from me at Nunn and Curry on Irving Street in San Francisco. Dad, he said, until I was 12 or 13, you were drunk every night, and then you came out and you said, I'm not the person you thought I was, and I didn't know who the hell you were. And I was so stunned by that, so taken aback, and yet so grateful, because it was a message that he had needed to say to me for far, far too long. And it was a beginning of breaking through some of the barrier that had been there. On the next page in the prologue, I refer to my older son, who was at a younger time angry at me as only a 17-year-old can be at his father. My older son's mouth had contorted around the word faggot and hurled it at me before he really understood what it meant or that I was. It was the only time I ever struck one of my sons, and that blow came more from my own utter frustration with my silence than my son's reach to hurt me. I will never forgive myself or forget the look on his face after that blow. When my older son read that, he became very upset. And he said to me, Dad, between the ages of 13 and 17, you hit me many times. And I was stunned. When I wrote this, this was absolutely my recollection. As he talked to me about this, I realized that so much of what had gone on had been done in the process of my alcoholic dependency. And during those years, I was very, very heavily under the grasp of alcohol. And he said, even when you came out, when you stopped drinking, it even seemed to get worse. And that's true for people who are drying out from alcohol.
You've lost your sedative.
Yes. And so, but not remembering it was one of the things that was so difficult and so desperate.
Let me back up a little bit here, because I want to, before we get into where you have your family, you went through several efforts. In fact, the fact that you had a family was one of your efforts to come to grips with being gay or trying not to be gay.
Yeah.
And part of that effort went through the confessional with the Catholic Church.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're a sinful fellow, you go to the priest and you tell him. What was your experience there?
Well, from the earliest, at seven, a Catholic child, at least in those days, went to confession. That was how you began your spiritual journey. And so you had to examine your conscience and think about what you might have done to be absolved for. As I grew into my adolescence and I had these attractions toward other males, then in the confessional, I had priests telling me, oh, you know, don't worry about these things. Once you get married, they'll take care of themselves. And It was a very, very disturbing and dysfunctional kind of situation to be in, to place a child in. So fear, you know, I when I was teaching, I used to write on the board the four-letter F word, and I would take my piece of chalk and start with a big F, and the kids would be startled, and then I would write the next letter E, and then A, and then R, and there was this huge sigh of relief from them that I hadn't written the other F word. But at the same time, this was the thing that I was trying to get across, that we are so locked in by fear. And that's what happened to me. I could not accept what was going on in myself. And so I went through many advisors, counselors, confessors. One of the priests at the University of Santa Clara, the head of the theology department at the time, said to me, "If you are indeed a homosexual, you know whose fault it is, don't you? Your dear devoted parents." And he was the one who gave me, and he, you know, this was the intellectual elite of the church, the Jesuits. And he, on the campus, was one of the most intellectually elite.
That was in keeping with the psychiatry of the time, is that correct?
It absolutely was. It absolutely was. And it was just on the brink of beginning to remove homosexuality from the list of psychiatric diseases. But he gave me the name of a psychiatrist to whom I went for the next 2 years to get myself straight. I wanted desperately to be straight. I did not want everything I knew, everything I perceived about homosexuality was, you know, in hushed tones and terrible and dreadful and so forth. And I needed to expunge that part of myself.
To the point that you actually got married.
I believed after 2 years of psychotherapy that I was straight. Okay, the psychiatrist said to me, when I would mention that I still had attractions to men at times, he said, "It's not uncommon for straight people to have same-gender attractions from time to time." So I just neatly tucked that away in the back of my mind and thought, you know, I've had all this psychotherapy, and, you know, this is what I want, and I went ahead and believed that I was straight and married. I loved my wife. There's no question about it. Lots of things came along that worked into a tragic situation in terms of the marriage, and that's in the book as well. And I wound up raising my two sons myself from the time the youngest was three. And So what they had to go through, and this is one of the things I want to really, really focus on also, that, yes, absolutely, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender kids have a terrible time most of the time coming out and getting through their straight families. But the straight children of gay people who are coming out themselves have a terrible time also. If, in particular, the gay person who is coming out is not that far advanced and in touch with himself. And so this is one of the major things that I think needs to be stressed here as well.
Well, which is a good opportunity to bring Jill in here. So let me remind you, you're listening to Ronald Henry Schmidt. His book is Once Removed, A Story of Love, Loss, and a Cause Champion. It's out now from Sasha Press. And we're taking your calls and your experiences as well as a parent, as a child, dealing with the school system as we continue our conversation. And we'll open the phone lines a little later on. But in the meantime, you're welcome to email feedback@yourcallradio.org, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's do welcome Jill Marcellus to the show. She's communications coordinator for the Gay Straight Alliance Network. And that national youth leadership group empowers young people to fight homophobia and transphobia through school-based Gay Straight Alliance clubs. Those are GSA clubs. And Jill runs GSA's network, Make It Better. And that's designed to give youth and adults concrete tools to make it better right now for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth. Jill, thanks for waiting and welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I am curious, as you were listening to Ron tell his story, how much of what now are fairly dated memories, we're talking about his coming up in the 50s and getting married and raising children, how much of this is still a reality for children today, you know, facing, if they go to a church or a spiritual leader, not necessarily hearing accurate or supportive words, they go to the family and the relationship, or the reaction is mixed from semi-supportive parents to smirking friends and brothers. How much of this is still a reality?
It's absolutely still a reality for a lot of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth in this country. There's just one shocking stat that I think really gets this out there, which is up to 40% of all homeless young people identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. It's really, they're facing unacceptance from their family, and they're being kicked out. They're being pushed out of schools. Discipline policies by principals or administration discriminating against them. There's a lot of bullying still in schools, and in fact, it has even gotten more intense to a certain extent because of bullying going online and really being able to follow young people wherever they are. So there is a huge problem still for a lot of young people. And of course, it depends on the community that they're in and the school in which they're raised. But a lot of that, you know, it's really the work that we're doing in schools and communities to make it better for young people that changes that reality.
You know, there was part of Ron's story that stood out to me was that in his counseling he received, he was told it was pretty normal for a guy who was really straight to feel the occasional same-sex attraction. And that almost verges into an acceptance of being bisexual. And what's interesting, as we hear about the efforts for LGBT kids to come out, to be accepted, to receive support in the schools, bisexuality, as is the case in the larger gay-lesbian community as well, is still something that we don't hear about or think about much. You know, we see the young girls in bars on the videos online where it's basically girls making out with girls to stimulate guys. But that's the high profile of bisexuality. How much of an issue is that for kids in school to learn that it's not necessarily either or? It could be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, that's absolutely a huge issue. In fact, biphobia is just as big of an issue, and a lot of the stereotypes about bisexual people, including, you know, that idea that they're just really promiscuous, that like what you were talking about with girls making out with other girls in bars for guys, you know, that really comes out of a certain level of homophobia and sexism and gender discrimination, and so it really is very limiting the way that we talk about gender and sexual orientation in this country. And it can be very limiting for young people who are trying to figure out their own identities. And that goes for not just understanding that you might be attracted to men or women or both, but even understanding that there are transgender young people out there, or there are young people who don't identify as either gender, and breaking through that idea that you have to be either strictly one thing or strictly another, and getting, you know, just really following how you identify.
Ron Schmidt, you understood as a teacher that you could be a support system for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender youth. You tried to come out as a teacher for the sake of the children, and you received pushback from the administration. Can you tell us about that?
Thank you. But first of all, Jill, hello. I'm delighted to be sharing this time with you. And my regards to Carolyn Laub, if you are connected with her these days.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
She's still our executive director.
Okay, excellent. When I was in my very first year of teaching, my first semester of teaching as a temporary teacher on a temporary contract in Morgan Hill Unified, just south of San Jose, it's a very conservative district, we had a teen suicide. An eighth grade girl hanged herself at the other middle school. And it was shocking, to say the least. Everyone was concerned about copycat suicides then as well. And there was a psychiatrist brought out from the county health department to talk to all staffs at their different sites. And he essentially didn't tell any of us anything we didn't already know, but there was no mention whatsoever of sexual identity problems. And I went into my principal the next day, and I said, that was like putting a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. And I said that tremendous numbers of these children who commit suicide are LGBT or questioning, and they're dealing with sexual identity problems. And I said, I know that because I am myself gay. And at that point, his jaw dropped, and he said, if that were to become generally known in this district, it would bring down the walls of this district. It nearly did in the long run, as a matter of fact.
Now, what year was this?
This would have been 1983 is when I went there to that district.
That late.
And again, this is a very conservative district, a bedroom community outside of San Jose. He forbade me to talk about gay issues in the classroom. I dug in, and I had lost a job at my previous district for writing a letter to the editor about the Mercury's, the San Jose Mercury's, shoddy coverage of the gay pride parade. And when that came out, I was told that my contract would not be renewed. They didn't have a need for me. I dug in, and I joined both teachers' unions, and both teachers' unions supported my right to be there as a gay teacher. Now, I was still on a temporary contract, but I was able to do this, and I did. Whenever I was in a teacher's meeting or a district meeting, I began to raise this issue. The first time I said the GNL words in a district meeting, the oxygen evaporated from the room. It was just amazing. And in time, when other people saw me there, they just expected that it was going to be raised. And it was essential that it be raised. I met a wonderful, wonderful woman named Ann Davidson, who was a PFLAG mother. And PFLAG is Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. We were at the same conference together, and we talked about these issues, and we decided to develop a workshop that we would bring to all the districts in Santa Clara County. And this workshop was The Invisible Minority in Our Schools, Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgendered Youth. We went through all the districts in Santa Clara County, and lobbied and lobbied, and we were finally able to get this workshop going in all of those places. So we had parents. We had a panel of parents, two or three parents from PFLAG usually, but from the district. And we had youth from the district also.
And we're going to pick up that story when we come back on the other half of this break. But you're listening to Ron Schmidt, whose book is Once Removed, A Story of Love, Loss, and a Cause Championed. And on the line with us from the Gay Straight Alliance Network is Jill Marcellus. She's their communications coordinator. We'll hear more about their work in the second half as well. And your calls, of course, are very important to the show. We'd love to hear from you at 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. We're watching your emails, too. Feedback at yourcallradio.org. What's your experience as a gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender teacher or student or parent who has students in the schools who are dealing with being the children of LGBT people? What resources do you rely on? How do you think things have changed over the years? And what are the best ways to help LGBT youth feel safe and supported? That and more coming up on Your Call. Angie Carr is sitting in from Rose Aguilar, and we will be right back after this break.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco, and we have a free email newsletter that will keep you up to date about local public radio programming and events, as well as the latest news in public media. To sign up, just click on Sign Me Up for E-News, that link at kalw.org. Your local public radio station, and thank you for listening to and supporting KALW.
It's Your Call. I'm Angie Cuero, and we are talking about the experiences past and present for LGBT youth in the schools and the children of LGBT parents as they work their way through their childhood as well. And we have on the line Jill Marcellus. She's communications coordinator for the Gay Straight Alliance Network. And we were just in the middle of a story from Ron Schmidt. And Ron, you were talking about gradually bringing in the influence of the unions and the parents and PFLAG into the schools.
Yes. And I can't emphasize enough the importance of PFLAG out there. And they're listed as one of the support groups in the back of my book, as is GSA, the Gay Straight Alliance, as well, and several others. But in any event, we were able finally to actually make this workshop happen in Morgan Hill Unified. There was a lot of resistance to it. We had a board meeting at which 400 people showed up, half of them foaming at the mouth, conservatives who were opposed to this. But the superintendent went ahead and supported the idea. We went on through, and I had one of my students in Morgan Hill Unified spoke at the workshop that we did for the administrators and counselors. And she told of having been in a classroom where the teacher set aside his whole entire lesson plan and allowed faggot slurs and dyke slurs and all to be just bandied about the whole time of the class. And she said to the administrators and counselors in this session, she said, "I was so afraid they were going to turn to me and say, 'You're one of them, aren't you?'" And she burst into tears. She just sobbed, "Where were you? Where were you?" And I moved next to her, and I handed her my handkerchief to try to help her calm down a little bit. She dried her tears, and that handkerchief I never washed. I took it with me to every workshop I ever did after that. That was truly what a relic is about. But she was so courageous to have done that, and I thought we had made great progress.
You know, I'm going to actually interrupt your story there because I feel it's important to bring Jill in here. And Jill, again, I want to contrast the experiences that Ron is talking about with what faces teachers and administrations today, and I think very key to what he just explained to us. We sometimes, and I speak we as the media, as the general society, we view teachers and administrations as monolithic and held to a specific standard. And Ron illustrates here that the teachers and the administrators are dealing with their own humanity, their own prejudices, their own fears. And that's not something we hear about very often.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why one of the most important steps when trying to make it better for LGBT youth is actually putting in place systems in the school that help teachers cope with their own struggles and help administrators clarify what the problem is. There's one point that Ron brought up that I want to go back to a bit, which is that, you know, when the young person he was talking about earlier who took her own life and how it just was not mentioned at all that her sexual orientation or gender identity. And we've seen that somewhat lately with a lot of the growing headlines around young people who have taken their own lives and how bullying now has become sort of a household term. But combating bullying alone or combating just this idea of, you know, being mean to one another without specifying why people are bullying, without specifying the discrimination and the prejudice that really goes behind it, it doesn't accomplish what it needs to. So when we're talking about combating bullying or combating harassment against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth, we have to say there has to be policies in the school that specifically say it is not okay for you to harass someone on the basis of their sexual orientation or their gender identity or expression. And then that's something that sends a message to the administrators as well. That's something that the administrators can hold up and say, okay, this is in the rules. This is not an acceptable way to behave.
We very much like to hear from teachers, students, and parents who've been dealing with these issues. As you hear Ron's story and hear Jill comment on her work with the Gay Straight Alliance Network, trying to empower students, teachers, and parents around this. Our number is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Email is feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Ron, you've got an important story to tell about finally taking these issues to court.
Yes.
To get the power. I want to slip this quick email in here, though. We hear from Al, who says, given we know the difficulties, would it not help if most of the persons that have not come out came out? It would be monumental. Why do we not put more effort into making that possible? And Al says, it seems hypocritical to complain about injustice and treatment of persons that don't come out while continuing to negate our own closetedness, he says.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. That would be marvelous if that were possible. In the 15 years that I taught in Morgan Hill Unified, I was the only out gay teacher. And to the best of my knowledge, I'm still the only out gay teacher from Morgan Hill Unified.
Statistically, that's impossible.
I would love, but it's out gay. That's the thing. But I would love to be able to have that atmosphere created so that everybody could feel that they could do that. We thought we had made great progress after those workshops, but then I received a phone call from a young woman who had graduated from Live Oak High School, the high school in the district, and it was mid-year. She had graduated the previous spring. And she called and she said, I was told I should talk to you. She said, five other students and I were mercilessly harassed during our time at Live Oak High School. And I was stunned. I couldn't believe it. And I made arrangements to get together and talk with her. We met for lunch. And she told me about all of these things, that she had been taunted with dyke slurs, and dyke was scratched into her locker and chalked in front of her locker and that sort of thing. Some other kids had come up where she and her friends were sitting at lunch in the quad and tossed a gay porn magazine or a straight porn magazine on the table in front of them and said, this is the way it's supposed to be done. Things of this sort. She went to the assistant principal, and the assistant principal said to her, well, are you a lesbian? That was her response to this harassment. It was just stunning. And I said to Alana, I said, you know, we've done the talking. We've been to the board. We've done the workshop. If you're still experiencing this kind of harassment, then the only thing they'll listen to is a lawsuit. And if you want me to, I will take you to an attorney and to the ACLU. And she said, absolutely. And that's what happened. I contacted another attorney friend of mine in Morgan Hill, and Rosenzweig, who directed us to Diane Ritchie, an attorney in San Jose, and I contacted Ann Brick at ACLU, and they came together, and with a PFLAG mother, we brought Alana and a boy, the only boy in the group of six students who had been harassed, to meet with the attorney, and the lawsuit was filed. And the district dragged its feet in that situation for 6 years. They claimed they didn't know the harassment was taking place. And at the end of those 6 years, in 2004, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals finally declared, if you didn't know, you should have known. There was plenty of evidence, and the lawsuit could proceed, at which point the district settled finally for $1.1 million. Now, you would think that would say to other districts, we need to get ourselves in shape, but obviously we know that hasn't happened. The other thing that was so important that Jill said is that mandated in that decision was the fact that every year all students and all staff had to be processing through awareness trainings about these issues. So that's mandated every year.
And with that, we are going to go to the calls because they're right on target here. And Jill, we'll take your comments in a moment. We got so many people waiting to talk. We're going to start with Tony, who's checking in from Santa Cruz. Tony, thanks for listening and welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. The primary question is, how have things changed and are they getting better? And yeah, they were. I turned 18 within months of being gay, being decriminalized in the state of California. Mm. Back in the 50s, during the McCarthy period, there was a case in Los Angeles that caused a big furor in California, and the California then mandated in its welfare and institutions code that research be done on changing gay people. That was only just repealed in the last 2 years. So all this time there was this stuff, and it could include mandatory commitment, especially if the family agreed. So prior to age 18, this is really important for gay kids that at that time, that you could be involuntarily committed. Now, anyone who wants to do a web search using these key words, the gay Dachau or homosexual Dachau, most gay people of my generation in California knew about Atascadero State Hospital and the lobotomies that were being done there and were being done across the nation in an attempt to cure gay people.
Wow, God, my stomach just flipped even hearing that. Jill, we actually saw, I remember not too long ago in the news, parents still have the ability to send their children to, you know, the Pray the Gay Away groups or the camps mm-hmm. that try to re-indoctrinate them. This is still legal.
Yeah, so-called reparative therapy or ex-gay therapy, absolutely. It's still legal, and it's still a huge problem in large swaths of America. And I want to add too that also to what Ron was saying earlier, that in terms of teachers coming out and in terms of people coming feeling free to come out and setting an example, I do think that it is still very difficult for teachers, and it still is very difficult. There are certain situations where people do not feel safe to come out, and that is one of the biggest complaints that we've heard from teachers who want to make it better in their schools, but say that they don't feel safe. They're worried that their jobs are at risk. And so one of the things that we found is that it doesn't all have to come from the top down. It doesn't all have to be teachers setting the example. We know we had a young person at Menlo Atherton High School who was a great spokesperson for the Make It Better Project and a real activist at a school and leader of his GSA. And he actually led a campaign in his school that his school went from having zero teachers who were out to having four teachers who were out.
Wow.
Jill Marcellus is on the line from the Gay Straight Alliance Network. In the studio, we have Ronald Henry Schmidt, author of Once Removed, and we're staying with the phone lines at 866-798-8255. And we have Brian is waiting to speak with us here in San Francisco. Hey, Brian.
Hi. Yeah, I have three boys, the youngest of whom is 8. And it seems to me like he may very well be gay. And I'm just curious how explicit, you know, I should be with him about it at his age.
What a great question. Let's go to Ron and then to Jill.
That's an amazingly important question, Brian. And one of the things that my sons have said to me since this book has been published is, Dad, before you came out, you never indicated that it was okay to be gay. And that, of course, was because of my own closet. And I didn't talk about those things because I was afraid that I would be betrayed in that talking. It's really important to talk about those things, to share, you know, get involved with organizations such as PFLAG and GSA. Absolutely bring them to meeting. Bring your son to meetings. Bring all of your children to meetings at PFLAG. There's a PFLAG meeting that happens on, I forget which Sunday it is. I think it's the first Sunday of the month in San Francisco at the Lutheran Church. And go and just, you don't have to be gay to go to them. They're just welcoming to everybody. And absolutely bring them in and bring your kids in and get a sense of, yes, it's fine. It's okay. If this is who you are, Cherish it.
Jill, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I mean, I would add to that that whether or not your son might be gay, it really still is important to emphasize for straight youth as well that there are people who have different sexual orientations, there are people with different gender identities, and that is all, you know, okay and acceptable in our society, and that you support people who are different. And I think that So going to meetings, no matter who your child is, it's really an important thing to do, to just send that message.
And talk about great people in history who were gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender. Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, you know, all of these, and writers and so forth. There was an article just the other day about Tim Cook being gay, the new head of Apple. And let that be a part of the regular conversation so that kids and families understand this is fine.
Brian, I hope that was helpful.
Well, just to follow up real briefly.
Sure.
I don't even really understand what his conception of sex is or gender. And so when he sort of wants to understand what being gay is, it goes without saying that I love him and it doesn't matter what orientation he has, but do I sort of define it as the sexual act or the attraction, or what is being gay versus being straight to an 8-year-old?
Jill, I heard you check in
love.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say, speak the same way that he might know about parents in his community, how if there are straight parents and there are, there's a mother and a father who love each other, it's the same way that some people have a mother and father, and some people have a mother and a mother. And so really getting to that sense that, some people, how we love each other. Well, there are some people who love other women and there are some people who love other men and who want to spend their lives with them. It's not at all about going to the specifics about what happens privately. It's really about just the way that they show affection.
There are also excellent books that are out now. Heather Has Two Mommies, Daddy's Roommate, books like this that deal with this kind of issue as well. And
the reason I ask that is he's been incredibly frank with his questions. I think he's heard phrases like suck a blank. And he's like, Dad, what is that? And I'm like, holy cow.
Okay. Brian, I so don't want to be in your shoes. Oh, my gosh.
That's why I asked that. But I
would answer it as candidly as possible, as candidly as you feel you can. And you're going to feel some discomfort with it, but that's okay. One of the things I would ask also is encourage you to do is to come to the Castro. Bring your kids on a field trip to the Castro and start with Cafe Flor. You'll find same gender couples there with children. These are same gender families that are now proliferating in the Castro and other parts of the country.
Brian, thanks for the call very much. And Jill, this is a chance, too, for Brian and any other parents to emphasize that being gay is not restricted to what you do with your genitals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can you expound on that a little bit? Because I think some people still look at that as your sexual identity is completely wrapped up between your legs.
Yeah. No, and that is not at all the case. And it's very much about, the same way that from a young age that you're straight or that you're it's really about who you are and not about what you do and how you behave. And so I think a lot of your questions, Brian, were going back to really just your child asking about sex and being curious about sex, which really doesn't have anything to do with, homosexuality versus heterosexuality. It's really about about sex in general. So you might want to look into go to other resources for how to talk to your child about that when they're curious. But when it comes to just talking about how someone identifies or who someone is, that's not at all limited to their behavior.
I want to take more of our calls at 866-798-8255. We definitely want to hear your stories and your questions. And as Brian just defined, you can pretty much ask anything and we'll deal with it here. 866-798-TALK. We're checking your email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And we have Gail who's hanging on in Carmel. Gail, I appreciate your waiting. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I have a very interesting story that might fit very well into this lovely conversation.
Okay.
I grew up with two gay brothers. I have three brothers in total. My older brother, Mark, is a very famous, well-known author in the gay world. And I remember growing up with him, and people around us knew that he was gay. My other brother, Kirk, who has since passed, was a year younger than me, and my brother Kirk and I were always together, but people didn't really realize that he was gay because he fit so well into both the straight and the gay world. My other brother, John, is 10 years difference between my brother Kirk and I. I'm straight, my youngest brother, John, is straight, but my two gay brothers that I grew up with, boy, you talk about having interesting issues. I loved my brothers, and I just knew them as being gay. I didn't know really much of anything else, except for when I started going into 7th and 8th grade. Oh, my goodness. That's when the pot was really stirred. And I'm a very assertive, forward-moving girl, and I defended my brothers when it got really, really heavy. But my younger brother, Kirk, again, fit into both worlds. He was a very upright, beautiful, blonde man that fit into both worlds, and people really didn't know he was gay until maybe he was about 16. My other brother, Mark, however, people, I think, knew he was gay from the very, very beginning. And I just can't imagine the trials and tribulations. And I've talked to my brothers all my life, and they were the trials and tribulations they went through. I can't even begin to put a mark on. I just admire gay people. I admire the world that they have to live in with all the people pointing their fingers at them. And straight people, we have our own issues, but gay people, it's just almost unimaginable what we in the straight world put on the gay label. All for what? You are born who you are in all your loveliness.
Gail, that's a wonderful story.
That's basically really, if you have any questions, please go ahead. And my brother, Mark, is a very famous, well-known author, and he's written several books on gay lifestyle.
Let me ask you, Gail, when they were coming up through the school system, was this an issue that teachers dealt with, that administration dealt with? Was there bullying? Because some of the issues we're dealing with today are you know, the bullying issues for children in school.
Well, when I was going through school, it was the late 60s, early 70s, and everything basically was, how can I put it? Not an issue, but my older brother, Mark, absolutely. From time to time, I had to step in, and I guess the word is defend him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that really is the word, but from time to time, absolutely. But Mark we had a teacher that Mark was particularly drawn to that was a gay gentleman. And Mark always was such a forward-moving person that, he put up with quite a bit.
All right, Gail, what? Gail. We need to run to our next call. We just got time to squeeze in Hillary from Felton here, so I'm going to do that. Gail, thank you, and welcome to the show, Hillary. Hi.
Thank you very much. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank deeply your guests who are on, who are fighting for gay rights and for gay youth. It's so essential. I came out when I was 16, and I found as I grew, the less I stood in my fear, the less... let me put it in a positive sense. The prouder I got, the more I could stand in my strength. And a lot of it had to do with, I have a little phrase, I'm sure a lot of folks have the phrase, you know, I had to grow some ovaries. I had to stand strong. I had to stand proud. And it's part of it is, as long as you deny who you are, people can whip you with it.
Yeah.
But if you say, hey, yeah, I'm a lesbian, then what about it? What are you?
Yeah.
You know, have a nice day, you know.
Yeah.
You can't win me with that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, you know, they use the word dyke or faggot. It's like, I had gay friends who were like, yes, honey, I am a faggot, you know, and I'm a beautiful one, aren't I?
Yeah.
But if, you know, if, and I know it's not easy in high school, gathering with friends who are also unusual or nerds or whatever, that helps because you can sort of run in a pack a little bit.
Boy, great to hear from you on this, Hillary. Yeah. I appreciate it, Jim.
Hillary, I just applaud what you're saying. I think it's wonderful, and what you're alluding to is another four letter word that is a favorite of mine, and that is RISK, risk.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
need to risk in at mm-hmm. the Twin Peaks Bar in at the corner of Castro and Market. There is a little sign between the windows that says, no cross, no crown. And
yeah.
in my drinking years, I used to go in and see that, and I thought, that's true. And you have to risk, and I thank mm-hmm. you for what you've done.
In fact, I need to thank you all because we are actually wrapping up in the show here. So much more we wanted to get to, but some of that you can follow up yourself at our website, yourcallradio.org, where we're going to put resources for all the different groups we've talked about, Ron Schmidt's Once Removed books, the Gay Straight Alliance, PFLAG will be there. We have there's a video you might want to check out. That is Jonah Mowry, who came out online and talked honestly about the challenges facing him as a young boy. His anti-bullying video is linked there as well, and links to the Trevor Project. Ronald Schmidt, I thank you for being in studio, and your book, Once Removed, Story of Love, Loss, and a Cause Champion. You had a quick last thought?
I wanted to add one real quick thing for Brian in particular and his son. Paternal Instinct. Get the DVD of Paternal Instinct.
And we need to leave that there right there. And I want to say thanks as well to Jill Marcellus. Jill, thank you. We have a link to your call, or to Gay Straight Alliance online as well. Angie Coro in for Rose Aguilar. Thank you for your questions and your calls. And Rose will see you tomorrow. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss media coverage for the ongoing protests in Russia over allegations of election fraud. We'll also discuss Wall Street whistleblowers. Where's the coverage? We'll be joined by Columbia Journalism Review's Ryan Chittum, and Christian Science Monitor's Fred Weir joins us from Moscow. Where did you see the best reporting this week? Join us live at 10 or send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Mysick is our web editor. And Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Alan Farley is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.